Have you ever wrestled with God? That's what that first reading is about from Genesis. Jacob, it's described, wrestles with God. Jacob is about to encounter his brother Esau, and he doesn't have the best of relationships with Esau, and he's afraid of meeting Esau, and he sends his family and everybody across this river, but he spends the night before crossing the river, and it's described that he goes through this wrestling experience. He struggles with God. And yet, during the struggle, he doesn't know who this is. It's not until morning time that he discovers that this is God. And it's an important event in Jacob's life because his name is changed. And he walks away with an injured hip socket. And he's felt this struggle. He knows what this wrestling has been like. I think when we look at the spiritual journey in our faith life, sometimes we don't see wrestling or struggling as a part of that. Sometimes we get into the image that we sometimes pick up that to be holy, to be a person of God, to be saintly is somehow best depicted in these paintings we sometimes see of, you know, you see a saint sometimes with their hands folded and looking up to God with this angelic face as if that's what holiness is. And yet when we look at the scriptures, throughout the scriptures, most of the people that really encounter God and come to know who God is in their lives don't necessarily experience this kind of look. But what they really experience is wrestling and struggling in their lives. And they're transformed through that. Their lives are changed through that. That sense of wrestling and struggling is a part of the spiritual journey. And it leads us to a deeper understanding of who God is. I've made a couple references to this in the past, but we begin the journey oftentimes in a religious tradition with what's referred to sometimes as an outer authority. We become part of a community, and we take up that community's identity, its customs, its laws, its rules, its regulations, and it begins us on the journey. But as we walk that journey and begin to really encounter the holy and who God is in our lives, we will face wrestling and struggling. And when we come out of that, perhaps we come out with a relationship with the holy, with God, that creates in us what's oftentimes referred to as an inner authority. Whereas we may have started out depending upon the culture and the religious traditions of the belonging system to which we belong, eventually we draw more on this inner experience of who God is. And that's a part of that faith journey. I'd like to share with you two stories this morning of two people who in my life, I believe, have walked that journey and have wrestled with God and come to God with a whole different experience. They speak from more of what I describe as an inner experience. Last week when Toni was preaching, she talked about thin places and Celtic spirituality. Celtic spirituality is something in our tradition that describes a certain area of the Christian tradition. It's a spirituality that's so tied to the earth and to the world around us. And at times it's described as being challenging and sometimes messy is a word that's used. Not in a negative way, but it's just we go through this experience and we feel God's presence around us and we try to take this in, called Celtic spirituality. I'd like to share with you a story of two people who I think wrestled with God and came from this tradition of spirituality. One is my Aunt Jane. My Aunt Jane. My mother's mother, we called her my nanny. My mother's mother was married years ago and had four children. One of them died. And after seven years of marriage, her husband died. And my nanny raised my mother and my two uncles as a single parent. She never remarried. She worked hard as a seamstress and raised my uncles and my mother. Living with them, though, was Aunt Jane. Now, this is more the Irish side of my family. I have a lot of Irish in my family besides Polish, Czech, and English. But the Irish part of my family. Aunt Jane lived with them. Now, Aunt Jane, it seems to us, was not really an aunt. There was no real blood relationship. But if you have any Irish background in you, you probably know that everybody is either an aunt or a cousin. It just seems like everyone's introduced, this is a cousin or an aunt. But Aunt Jane lived with my mother, my two uncles, my nanny, and they were family together. My uncles oftentimes said we didn't have a father, but we had two mothers. Jane came from this inner sense of God's presence. She was a devout Roman Catholic, certainly saw the church as part of her life. She was this person who loved to read literature, particularly by Irish authors. And so it came to Lent. It was Lent one year, and it was a Friday in Lent. Now, this is in the 1920s or so, 1930s. It's a Friday in Lent. In the Roman Catholic tradition, some of you may have come from that tradition, Fridays in Lent are days of fasting and abstinence, meaning abstinence, no meat, and fasting, only one main meal a day. The other two meals are supposed to be a little lighter. That's kind of the tradition. So it's a Friday in Lent. And the story is told to me by my uncle that my two uncles must have been working at that time and still living at home. They've worked all week. They come home this Friday night for dinner. And my Aunt Jane has prepared dinner, and she puts it on the table. And it seems like it was like either a beef stew or some kind of a meat dish, which was pretty extravagant for those times. And she puts it on the table, and they start eating. And my nanny says to my Aunt Jane, "Jane, it's Lent. It's Friday in Lent. We're not supposed to be eating this." And my Aunt Jane says, "Margaret," she called her Margaret, "Margaret, these boys have worked hard all week, and they're helping support this family with what they're doing. They worked hard today, and they're getting a good meal. They need meat on their bones." And they lived across the street from the church, and she pointed out the window and said, "Let the priests over there abstain from eating fast, but these boys are getting a good meal." Hear that coming from an inner place. You know, she was part of that culture, part of that tradition. But she saw in this situation something different. That stuff didn't really apply. Aunt Jane. And I know I've been shaped by that in many ways. I remember when I was a little boy, it was Lent, and I grew up in the Roman Catholic tradition, and it was you're not supposed to eat between meals. And I remember my mother having a piece of cake one night during Lent. And I remember as a little kid saying to my mother, "I thought we weren't supposed to eat between meals." And she says, "Oh, George, this is just my dessert. I just saved it till later. Saved it till later." And I just love that kind of wisdom, that way of, you know, shaping. The other story I want to share with you is when I was a deacon. I was ordained a deacon, and I was in a church for a year before I was ordained a priest. And the church that I was in as a deacon was St. Barnabas in the Bronx. And I've mentioned this in different homilies. St. Barnabas was a large parish. There were about 4,500 families. There were 18 masses on Sunday. It was a large urban church, and learned a lot that year. And the church was about 99.9% Irish Catholic. It was a predominant, was the culture. It was very Celtic, if you want to use that phrase. I had just been ordained, and I was preaching at St. Barnabas, and the gospel for the day was the gospel that we just read, this gospel reading about the loaves and the fishes. Now, I had just come out of seminary. And in the seminary, we had, you know, certainly studied scripture. All clergy do. Lots of scripture study in seminary. And I remember this particular reading as part of our education, our training. Many times when we hear this gospel reading, it's in a few of the gospels, this story of the loaves and the fishes, we hear it like this. There were a lot of people. There was not enough food. And Jesus performed a miracle. The miracle is that Jesus made bread and fish sort of appear, and everybody was fed. And that's the miracle. Jesus sort of created what was needed, this bread and fish from nowhere. Many scripture scholars have looked at that story, and there's different interpretations, but the predominant understanding, and the one that certainly made a lot of sense to me, was an interpretation that was a little bit different, still a miracle. It was suggested that the miracle is this. Jesus is gathered with these followers, some of his close followers and others who have come to hear Jesus and be with him. And the disciples, it's the end of the day, and they look at what they have, the little bit of food they have, and they say to Jesus, we just don't have enough. There's not enough here to share. These people are not going to be fed. You know, they're reacting in kind of a sense of scarcity. We don't have enough. And when we feel there's not a lot, that there's scarcity, we tend to hold on. We want to hold on to what the little that we do have. And what Jesus is doing is challenging that. Jesus is saying to them, the little you have, give it away. The little you have, share it. And the real miracle seems to be that the disciples did that, and it suggested that all those people who came to hear Jesus probably came with a little bit of food. People in that time would not have traveled like that without some food. And that as the disciples share what they have, the little that they have, all the people there begin to share the little that they have. And not only is it discovered that there's enough, but it's discovered that there's more than enough. There's an abundance. As the reading says, it filled 12 baskets, what was left over. And the suggestion is that the real miracle is Jesus challenging that sense of fear that we get when we feel we don't have enough. That sense of fear we have when we feel it's scarce. We don't have enough, and I want to hold on to it. And the miracle is sharing it, giving it away, and seeing the miracle that happens. That's the interpretation of this gospel reading that I find really is powerful. And so I was at St. Barnabas in the Bronx, just out of the seminary, and when you come out of seminary, you tend to think you know everything, and you just want to share all this information. I was excited about preaching. I've always loved preaching, and getting into parish ministry, it's one of the exciting parts that I was looking forward to, and this gospel reading came up, and I shared in my homily that interpretation of the gospel with the community, you know, teaching that we too, you know, we're called to not look at scarcity, but to share what we have. And I pointed out in the homily that this story is in the scriptures because for Jesus, what an incredible event this was. What an incredible moment this was. What an incredible day this was. You know, that Jesus at that time, in that place, in that moment, with those people, changed something and changed their lives. And it's in the scriptures, and it's a miracle. So after the service, I'm outside greeting people, and this elderly woman comes up to me. Now, this is 1979. It's when I was a deacon in 1979. And this elderly person comes up to me who probably grew up at that same time as like my Aunt Jane and my nanny and all of those. And she comes up to me and with this wonderful Irish accent, I believe coming from this sense of an inner authority. And she comes up to me and she says, well, that's very interesting what you're telling me, Father. She calls me Father. Very interesting what you're telling me. But let me tell you something. I'm not so impressed with what Jesus did. I understand what you're saying, but he did it just once. On that day, and they make a big deal out of it, and it's in the scriptures. But let me tell you something, Father, she says. I grew up poor. And I grew up never thinking I had enough. And my husband and I did the best we could to raise a family. We never thought we had enough. We lived in fear all the time. But let me tell you something. I raised my family, and we had enough. Jesus may have done that one time, but I did it my whole life. And that's a miracle, she says. And I remember giving her this great big hug and saying, yes, yes. Yeah. She came from this inner experience, which was so powerful. You know, she wasn't even impressed by Jesus, you know. I mean, oh, that's fine what he did, but let me tell you what I did. And she so identified with that. I mean, she wrestled with God in her life. She struggled in her life. Like Jacob, she may not have recognized that it was God, but she struggled. And she wrestled, and she came to this deep, deep sense of faith in her life and saw the miracle that was present in her life. That was a homily to me that day. You know, the words that I shared were nothing compared to what she taught me that day. That sense of being faithful and living from this inner place and working through struggles and wrestling and coming to know God ever so deeply in her life. And so as we gather together today, as we continue to wrestle and struggle in our lives, let those be opportunities for a deepening of that faith, an awareness of who God is as we walk this wondrous journey together. May we, like that the woman in the parish, like my Aunt Jane, like so many who lived at those times and still live today, feeling we don't have enough, there's not enough, and we want to hold on to it. And what Jesus is saying to us is, when we live in that sense of fear, share what we have. Share what we have and understand the incredible abundance that is before us. I invite us this day to continue that journey, continue that walk, as we live into the miracles of our lives that are happening all the time. And the scriptures are invitations to us to wake up to those miracles and see them present. May we continue walking into this wonder of God has for us, this dream that God has for us, walking into this inner authority, this place where we truly encounter the wisdom of God and make a difference in the world around us.